Here's how this whole mess started. Robert had to be in L.A. for a big meeting with his West Coast Titan Corporation execs, and his Boeing's engine had the gall to malfunction.
Tina!
He yelled from inside the soundproofed glass cube of his office. Robert isn't a yeller by nature, but he had no other choice in order to overcome the soundproofing, forcing his voice to travel through his open office door. I knew it was my name he'd called by the tone. We each had our own tone. If it had been his deputy he'd wanted, it would have been a gruff monosyllabic bark. For his senior editor, it would have been a throaty holler. His executive producer called for a higher-pitched squawk. My skill at deciphering these subtleties was critical, because it was my job to fetch whomever he called. When he wanted me, his voice dropped to a quieter bellow that bordered on a plea. It was a more intimate sound, because with me, Robert's needs were always personal. He had an upset stomach and required Tums. He'd forgotten a birthday and needed a last-minute gift. Or he couldn't for the life of him figure out how to upload this new software onto his iPad. Robert's vulnerable call for me was a daily assurance that I was essential to the success of this castle of a man. A man whom half the world considered to be a monster, because they could never come within earshot of understanding him. In less than a second, I was at his desk, notepad in hand. Behind me, a wall of flat screens flashed the news being broadcast by Titan and its so-called competitors. Robert had the uncanny ability to devote a small portion of his gaze to each screen simultaneously. In all, he owned 9 satellite television networks, 175 newspapers, 100 cable channels, 40 book imprints, 40 television stations, and 1 movie studio. His total audience reached around 4.7 billion people, which came out to around 3/4 of the population of the entire globe. But the news was his baby. He was never not watching it, analyzing it, shaping it. That's why he situated his office at Titan News headquarters, where he could keep close watch not only on his wall of flat screens, but also on his journalists. A man as powerful as Robert could have hidden himself anywhere, pulling at the strings of the world from a lounge chair in the Seychelles, unseen by his employees. But he needed to be here, at the center of it all, at the hub. Our office didn't look like a newsroom that you'd imagine from movies or TV drama series. The floors below ours were more like that, the broadcast, print media, and digital newsrooms, each of which could have easily passed for something out of the Matrix. And there was an entire floor of flashy studios used for our nonstop news coverage and thrill-a-minute opinion shows. But our office on the 40th floor was far less exciting. Just row after row of desks and cubicles. Still, we were the brain of the whole operation, the source from which all orders trickled down. Titan's chief editors and all of Robert's most trusted deputies had desks on our floor, so Robert could pull them into impromptus with the business leaders and celebrities he met with. And so he could foster relationships between them and the political party representatives. Yes. From both parties, who came to lobby him. I guess what I'm trying to say is, what the 40th floor lacked in flash, it made up for in influence. Robert had his shirt sleeves rolled up and was rubbing his dark-haired head with both hands like he always did when he was upset. For a man his age, Robert had a surprisingly full, thick head of hair, which he attributed to a hearty diet of smoked meats and aged bourbon.
I need to be on the next flight to L.A., he said, and have them bump the seats around mine.
Robert made requests like this as if he were ordering a pastrami on rye at the corner deli. Or in his case, maybe braised brisket on a roll.